heard someone comment about this chapter. Said, "Well, we'll have a short service Sunday. 5 verses." Oh, if I could tell you everything in this. 5 verses can turn into a whole bunch, I'm telling you. There's times when I've ministered and God has stirred my heart in verses that I could minister for 2 hours in one verse. And it's just an expository. All I'm doing is I'm expounding, giving you an understanding as God gives me an understanding of this verse, these verses that we pass through. It's not about how many we go through or how fast we get there. It's about getting an understanding, gleaning that understanding from this field. So when we pass through this field, we didn't leave anything laying here. Isn't that more important than trying to say, "Well, we studied the whole Bible this year." Well, you couldn't possibly study the whole Bible this year and got much out of it. But you could take one chapter and you could study that chapter. And I'm telling you what, if you'd study that chapter, and I mean study it, and study it and meditate upon it in the Lord, you'll know more than the people that read their Bibles 5 times a year. Because if they're just reading words and they're not taking time to understand what God is saying by His Spirit, what good are they doing? It's just a job, you know, what they're accountable for. Okay? Well, this morning, I'm going to read this in the King James. And I'll have one of you with the Living Bible to get it ready. You got it, Cindy?
Yeah.
Okay, well, in a minute I'll get you to read that, okay? I got you. Okay, chapter 3 of Hosea, verse 1. "Then said the Lord unto me, Go yet, love a woman beloved of her friend, yet an adulteress, according to the love of the Lord, toward the children of Israel, who look to other gods and love flagons of wine. So I brought her to me for 15 pieces of silver, and for an omer of barley, and a half omer of barley. And I said unto her, Thou shalt abide for me many days, and thou shalt not play the harlot, and thou shalt not be for another man, so will I also be for you. For the children of Israel shall abide many days without a king, and without a prince, and without a sacrifice, and without an image, and without an ephod, and without teraphim. Afterward shall the children of Israel return, and seek the Lord their God, and David their king, and shall fear the Lord and His goodness in the latter days." Okay? 5 verses that sound real simple, right? I'm going to have Cindy read this in the Living Bible.
"Then the Lord said to me, Go and get your wife again and bring her back to you and love her, even though she loves adultery. For the Lord still loves Israel, though she has turned to other gods and offered them choice gifts. So I bought her back from her slavery for a couple of dollars and 8 bushels of barley. And I said to her, You must live alone for many days and do not go out with other men nor be a prostitute, and I will wait for you. This illustrates the fact that Israel will be a long time without a king or prince and without an altar, temple, priest, or even idols. Afterward, they will return to the Lord their God and to the Messiah, their King, and they shall come trembling, submissive to the Lord, to His blessings in the end time."
Thank you. I think that Living Bible there in some of those verses are very expository in what's saying. It changes the meaning and puts it where it should be. It puts our thought process where it means to be. First of all, we know that this book is a book of shadows, types, allegories, metaphors, right? It's patterns. God shows us patterns. Now, we know in the book of Hosea, to start with, that God started out and gave him a word. What did He tell him to do? First thing He told him to do. Chapter 1, verse 2, I believe, He said, "Go take you a wife. She's a harlot," right? Go take a wife as a harlot. Who is a harlot? "Marry her and have children of her." We've already went through that, so I'm not going to go back and try to teach that again. But I want to show you the picture that's unfolding. How many covenants did God have?
3.
How many churches?
3.
How many realms?
3.
3 in everything. So, this first wife He took, she was an absolute harlot, wasn't she? Now, what did He say about this woman? Now, she was a man. She was someone loved, wasn't she? She had a commitment to one man, but yet she was an adulteress considering or compared to the love of God to Israel. Did it say she was a harlot? No, he said her love to her man was comparatively as an adulteress compared to how much God loves us. Do you understand what I'm saying? That this woman, even though she's got a man and she's faithful to him, she's still not faithful as God is to us. Does that make sense? That God is, His love is greater and His faithfulness is greater than the love of humanity, isn't it? Okay? Now, then said the Lord unto me, go yet, or again, and love a woman beloved of her friend, yet an adulteress, according to the love of the Lord toward the children of Israel, they who look to other gods and love flagons of wine. I want to show you something. That first wife he took in chapter 1 was the outer court. No. It was a different wife. Hang on. Okay. As surely as the book of Ruth, and I'll get there in a minute, okay? It's the same pattern as the book of Ruth. How many women was in the book of Ruth?
Three.
Ophel, Mariah, oh, I'm going to Rice Mountains. What is the word? What was her first one? Ha, stuck now.
Naomi was the first one.
No, Naomi's second one.
Second one. Ruth
was the third one. Orpah, Naomi and Ruth. There we go. So, three realms of the church, three realms. This is just the second realm here. Okay, the first realm was an out-and-out harlot, wasn't she? Talk to me. See, well, just hold on a minute. Okay, don't speak confusion to yourself. Listen, okay? You're trying to run out ahead of me. Whenever he got this first wife in the first chapter, verse 2, she was an out-and-out harlot, right? Now we come to the second chapter, third chapter, and we got another woman coming in here, and this woman is loved, right? She's committed to this person, this friend. Now notice it didn't even say husband, did it? So she is, what kind of a realm would you think? She's a second realm. She goes into the Pentecostal realm. And I can show you Pentecostal. I'll show you Pentecost in these verses. But it says she's an adulteress according to the love of the Lord. And she's one, they're ones that look to other gods and love flagons of wine. Okay? I'll show you this is the Pentecostal realm right here. Party time. This is party time. That says flagons of wine. Literally, if you look in the language, it says raisin cakes prepared for the feast. Okay? That's raisin cakes prepared for the feast. And I'll tell you what, you get in the Pentecostal realm and you want to see a party, they'll give you a party. And there's nothing wrong with the Pentecostal realm for every one of us to experience. But we can't live in Pentecost forever, can we? There's a time in our lives when Pentecost is very necessary. But there's a time when we have to come to tabernacles, to maturity. Okay? So we have to realize that God is showing us through the same pattern. The first wife that Hosea had was Orpah, the one that turns back, the dust covenant, okay? And he comes to this next woman. Did he even name her? Huh? Didn't even name her. She's the Pentecostal realm. You know why? Pentecost is what realm? Second realm. Wouldn't you notice what that means? Two means? Duality, confusion. In the realm of Pentecost, even in the first day, people don't have a real understanding who they are. But in the second day, they have such a confusion because they still think they're Adam and Christ both. Do you understand what I mean? Sure. They're performers. They're doing things that people tell them to do rather than listening to God. So listen what happens here to this woman. This is the realm of everybody likened to party. These are raisin cakes that she loves, and they follow after other gods, don't they? Now, what of those gods do you think they are? Anything that they create in their mind. Today, most of the churches believe that today is some kind of a special holy day because of tomorrow, or tomorrow is some special day. Don't you realize that's a god in their mind? See, every day is the Lord's day. So which one's different? None. We should understand that every day that we take in this world is a blessing of God that He's given to us to grow and to mature in and to perform our purpose upon the earth. It's not here just by chance, is it? Everything has a reason. And in this realm of this woman that he's taking now, this church realm, there's all kinds of other gods, and they love to party. Hey, let me tell you, I don't mind getting around an honest Pentecostal experience. I don't mind it. I don't mind it at all. I enjoy the life that I can feel there when it's sincere. But see, there's too many performers in this realm. If it's a sincere Pentecostal experience, I don't have a problem with it. I've been around a lot of Pentecostal people that love God more than anybody I've ever met in my life sometimes. I mean, they truly enjoy God where they're at. They're not performing. They're not playing a game. See, because in any realm, there's hypocrites. See, there's hypocrites in all realms. So I enjoy being around sincere people. As we've went out to experience other places with people, I can have a wonderful time with these people. They don't have to be where I am at. And I don't say that in some arrogant way. God has taken me someplace. I didn't go there on my own. And because He has elevated me in my understanding doesn't make me any better than them, because I can look back and see, that was me. Do you understand what I'm saying? I can look back and say, that was me down there. And thank God that He's brought me where He's brought me to, but I'm not going to puff myself up and think I'm any better than anybody else. And see, that's what starts happening in the Pentecostal realm. They start looking back and say, ha, them old boys out there in the dust coming, huh, heck with them, we've made it and they're all going to hell. That's not true. See, we all have a Passover, Pentecost, and a tabernacle experience to go through. And I just thank God that He's chose us to go into tabernacles. So here's what Hosea says. So I bought her to me for 15 pieces of silver and for an omer of barley and a half omer of barley. Well, what does 15 represent? You have to factor this. 3 times 5, what would that be? It's a witness of grace. See? There's grace of the grace of God is in the Pentecostal realm. If it wasn't, they'd all be murdering each other. Don't you know that the Pentecostal realm can be the nastiest, vilest realm of the church? Everybody wants to think that the outer court's the bad place. But the bad place is Pentecost. There's where everybody gets angry. There's the place of testing and trying, isn't it? In the book of Ruth, what happened to her, what happened to Naomi before the first chapter was over? She changed her name. And her name was no longer Naomi, something pleasant. But guess what? It was turned to Mara. Don't call me Naomi any longer. Call me Mara, because God has dealt bitterly with me. Well, see, there's what happens. People get there and they don't like God working in their lives. So the first thing they do, they get mad. And they start spitting and kicking and cussing and everything you can think of. That's the Pentecostal realm. So, this is all going on, but this is a witness of God's grace even in the Pentecostal realm. And I'm going to tell you, if there was no grace in Pentecost, I could never walk to tabernacles. Hello? You must have the grace. I think there's grace in all three realms. There's grace for all of it. He said 3 times 5, didn't he? It's in all of them. There's grace in all of them, but right now we're just dealing with the Pentecostal realm. So he says, I bought her to me for 15 pieces of silver. Silver stands for redemption. So he says, I redeemed her to me through the grace of God. It's only the grace of God that we come through the Pentecostal realm, out of the dust, isn't it? Into the sand. It's only the grace of God that we can get there. Can anybody voluntarily take this walk? See, no man comes to the Father except the Spirit draws him. It's not about what we want to do. It's about what our Father has set up before the foundation of the world or before the conception of the world. He has set this thing up. And when we hit the ground, our feet hit the ground and we're off walking. That's what he says in the book of Revelation. As soon as that man-child was birthed, he was immediately done what? He was caught up to the throne of God. See? You hit the ground with your feet on the ground, buddy, and you're running. You don't have no choice. It's not an option to you whether I want to do this or I want to do that. You just do what you're supposed to do. It's like some of these baby animals that's birthed out, and they do something so instinctively, it's amazing. You can take a turtle, and when it's hatched out in the ground, it's never seen water in its life. It's in the ground, and as soon as it pops up out of that egg, it starts digging for the daylight. And as soon as it hits daylight, it has a honing device, take it straight to the water. See? And that's the way we're supposed to be. As soon as God cracks that shell on us and brings the life into us, we're impregnated by His Spirit, we're to grow. And as soon as we break out of that shell and come out of the womb of God, guess what? We're immediately supposed to return to Him. And that should be an instinct in our life. Just, I'm on my way. Whatever my Father wants, that's what my Father gets. See? It's just an instinct. So He says, He brings us all back. Okay? He brought her back for 15 pieces of silver. I could say reconciliation, couldn't you? And for an omer of barley and a half omer. Well, you know what barley is? Barley is a symbol of Pentecost. You can go to the book of Ruth, and Ruth, and Naomi had her hard times in barley harvest. See? Where's the hard time come? Barley harvest, Pentecost. See? So when you're in a barley harvest in your life, guess what? You're in a place of testings and trials. It's a place where you can get angry, you can get mad, or you can get glad. You can get bitter, or you can get better. But whatever God's doing, He's going to do it. And your attitude in that test directly correlates to the longevity and severity of that test. See? If I know God's doing this thing, what good does it do to get angry about it? Just go with the flow. You find your peace, hook into it. What difference does it make what God's doing in my life? See, everybody thinks that we've got to have an agreement and we've got to do what we think is right. If I'm sitting here pastoring this church now, and God tells me, I want you to go to California, and I hope to God it ain't going to California. But if He would tell me to do that, what difference would that make to me? See, I'm not the boss. Okay? What should I do? Go. See? I don't have any plans of going anywhere, but if God wants me to serve Him someplace else, then, hey, I'm out of here. You see what I mean? We shouldn't care where God has us or takes us. All we care about is accomplishing what He wants us to do. How could I be in any better standing with God than that? Could you? Just want to do what He wants. Wherever you want, Lord, whatever you want. If that's our cry of our heart, not of our mouth, but of our heart. If our heart cries out to do just what He wants us to do, then it don't make any difference where it's at, does it? Don't make any difference. So we see this omer. There's something in that too. I know the Living Bible says about 8 bushels, but if you look in the languages, a lot of places, most places it says 10 bushels, approximately 10 bushels. He's telling me something inside of that. A bushel and a half, he's got an omer and a half omer. If an omer is 10, what's an omer and a half? Isn't that just what he said, 15 pieces of silver? Isn't it? 15 both places? What would that mean? No, twice. It's a witness of it, right. See, it's a witness of it. He said it one way and then turned around and says it another way. And that's just a witness to verify that what he said it a different way. Meaning the same thing. And verse 3 goes on and says, "And I said unto her, you shall abide for me many days." Right? "You shall abide for me many days. Thou shalt not play the harlot, and you shall not be for another man. So will I be for unto you." Okay? Now, what's he trying to say? pay attention to what I'm saying. Hear me. No. He said, I want you to know that you're going to be for a long time, right? Let me read again. That you shall abide many days, that a long time you shall not play the harlot, but you shall, and you shall not be for another man, so will I be also for you. This is the time of the law. Under the law, guess what? They were married unto God, right? This was the Jewish nation. We can see them. This is the time, a period of being under the law. And he says, for this amount of time, before that there was no law. Now you're to law. You're married to me now. You're in preparation for me now. And he said, you will not play the harlot. I'm going to tell you that the majority of the Jewish nation in that day was sincere. Okay? There was leadership that was perverted. True or false? There's always leadership that's perverted somewhere. But I'm telling you, the Jewish nation as a whole tried to be sincere unto God. The average person, we'd say the average person in church today, no matter how much trash has been pumped into their life and making them believe the wrong things, they want to serve God. I believe that's the basis of all humanity. They really, truly want to serve God. But the leadership is what is messed up. Okay? And I'll show you later on in another chapter that God is talking this to the priests. And wonder who the priests are. It's the leadership of the church. See, there's the ones that's creating the problems. It's not God speaking to you the wrong thing, is it? It's those tails wagging in Isaiah. The ones that destroy us. The prophets that teach and tell lies. Okay? He said, but this long time you're going to be under the law. And he said, I'll be for you just like you are for me. If you're faithful to me, I'll be faithful to you. Does that make sense? Is that anything more than we would ask out of our mate in marriages today? No. You be faithful to me and I'll be faithful to you. God's saying the same thing. See, we're married to Him in this relationship. You be faithful to me and I'll be faithful to you. I promise you, you'll come out all right in the end.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Under the law, see, God did not dwell in the temple, did He?
Yeah.
Got it? Okay. Because, verse 4, the children of Israel shall abide many days without a king. Now, Jesus has always been a king. Always has been, always will be, right? Melchizedek from the beginning, right? But, Israel shall abide many days without a king. The only reason Israel didn't have a king... Now we can say, well, they chose to have one. Yeah, I know they chose to have one. But they chose to not have God in their life, didn't they? They wanted to have a natural king over them. Right. And guess what? They didn't have it. And under the period of the law, was God actively dwelling in their lives and working with them? No, not really. It was all external things going on. They weren't worried about internally under the law. And he said, without a prince... Isn't Jesus called the Prince of Peace? And without a sacrifice. Well, wasn't He called the final sacrifice? Huh? The Paschal Lamb, the Passover Lamb, the final sacrifice. And without an image. Right? The image is literally a sacred pillar. See, here's what it is. Israel is always wanting something physical. The religious system in man wants something they can see. But doesn't the book say, blessed are those who don't see and yet believe? See, I don't have to have a picture of God. I don't have to have, like they did, a sacred pillar that they could come to and worship. And see, they feel like they always had to have, every place they stopped in the Old Testament, they tried to build altars, didn't they? They'd always go to a high place or pile rocks up. They'd do something to build an altar. See, but the altar should be in my heart. It shouldn't be that I have to build an altar in a specific place. And we can build an altar in a church. Now, I'm not talking about one of these wooden things here in the front. I'm talking about we can make the church an altar. It can be an idol to us. And we think we have to come to this building before we can worship God. If you only come to this building to worship God once a week, you've missed it. He's God 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. How about the worship for the rest of the week? See? So church buildings can become idols to people. And they are, and a lot of times. They're gods that they've built up to themselves. They're sacred pillars that they worship. Okay? And without an ephod, what's an ephod? Oh, so guess what? There's going to be a time when you're going to feel like you don't have a priest, isn't there? There's going to be a time when there is no physical priest. Well, thank God for that. That's going to take you and turn you back to God and make you realize that your sufficiency is in Him and not in a human being that He's got working through. Right? We have to realize that God is taking us to a place where we don't need it. And see, Israel couldn't do that. If they didn't have that physical priest, they didn't feel like they could contact God. And it's no different today. The church thinks if we haven't got someone that's been to school and got a degree from some religious organization, then we can't hear from God. That's not true. God has never stopped contacting His people. The people have quit listening. They've just quit listening to what God says. All we got to know is God is always speaking. We're just not hearing. It's our hearing problem. And we don't need no natural hearing aid. We need the Spirit to open our ears so we can see. And it says, also with beside the ephod, they also were without teraphim. You know what teraphim is? It's idols. See? If I think I have to have a podium in the front and a little wooden rail in front of it with padded place to kneel down, and I think I have to have a pointy thing on top and stained glass windows, you know what those are? They're teraphim. They're idols. See, people think they have to go to a certain place to worship God. We could meet in the middle of a field, weather permitting, and have a wonderful service for God. We can meet in your homes. We can meet in the bathroom. Sometimes I have some of my greatest meetings with God in my bathroom. See? It doesn't make any difference where we're at. And everybody thinks it's got to be in this certain type of setting. And oh, we know we have to wear special clothes. See? That's the thing we've got to get out of. We've got to be who we are and quit being this thing that someone has told us we should be. If I hear something from outside, external of my life, that makes me change, I got to question that. See, because it's got to be within. Now, I might hear someone say something out here, and it echoes inside of here, and it's the same thing I hear inside. Then I know God's talking to me. See, and He just used that person to witness it into my life. But if I'm not hearing it within my heart, should I listen to it? No. Don't worry about it. God's the one who will tell you what you need when you need it. The only thing you hear from me or anyone else ministering should be a witness in your spirit. It should light you up. But the church realm today, see, we can get quick in jumping on the church realm, but is it really the church realm? Are we not Israel? See, He's just telling us what our nature is. See, our nature is we like to worship things. We like to have them teraphim. And we like to have a priest so we can blame them. That's what Israel did. Moses, you go talk to God. Whatever He says, we'll do it. Yeah, right. They never obeyed anything. They did for a few minutes or a few months or a few years, and they went right back to the same thing again. See, because they didn't have it within their self. Humanity does not have within itself the ability to worship God. If it's not for the deep that's within us calling to the deep, how's it going to work? If God doesn't intervene, we'd still be in the same mess Israel was in back then, except we'd be high-tech about it. We'd have computers to do it. We could do it quicker and do more of it. But we'd be doing the same thing. And if God doesn't intervene in our life today, it's the same thing. We're just a bunch of high-tech people running around with a lot of knowledge of religious things. It's got to be in our heart. That's the computer that has to have the hard drive change, the program change. We could just take that into the computer and say a new hard drive and been reprogrammed. That's your heart. Ezekiel said He took the stony heart out and gave you a fleshly heart, one with compassion. There's your new hard drive. And He reprogrammed it with the mind of Christ. Guess what? If that's all that's in there, that's all that can work. Right? That's all that can work. And afterwards shall the children of Israel return and seek the Lord their God and David their king, and shall fear the Lord and his goodness in the latter days. Afterwards, he said, after all these things going on in your life, see, this, he didn't say if you want to, did he? Did he give anybody a choice in this? Hosea says, by the word of the Lord, you will. Afterwards, after all this crap goes on in our life, all this stuff we got to go through, we learn that stuff don't mean anything. It's only about God living within us and reconciling us back to Him, right? That's all it's about. He says, afterwards shall the children of Israel return. And I didn't see an option in that anywhere. Did he? Did he leave an option in there? He just said, they shall return and seek the Lord their God. So you know, they're going to give up their idolatrous man worship. It's not about an individual who has a great personality, who can speak all these great swelling words and entice people to believe all kinds of stuff and throw their wallets at him and give them all their money and just all this stuff. It's not about that. He said they're going to seek the Lord their God. That tells me they're going to realize who they are. They're going to know who their father is, aren't they? Someday they're going to do it. And David their king. Well, who is David? He was a type of Christ. So when they see David, the beloved, and what did God say about Jesus in Matthew chapter 2 or 3, whatever it was, I think it was where he got baptized. This is my beloved son in whom I'm well pleased. Well, what does the word David mean? Beloved of God. See, that's telling me it's Christ. So they're going to seek after God and their king, the Christ. And shall what? Reverence the Lord and His goodness in the latter days. If that's not reconciliation, excuse me, what is it? See? Was there any options about what they could do? God's in control of this whole thing. And the sooner that people come to the understanding that God is in control, I can lay down and sleep at night. Does it do any good for me to worry about what's going on in my kids' lives? Or in somebody else's life in some other country, I can say, Lord, bless them. You know it's in your plan. Whatever you want to do, amen, I'll go with it. Whatever you want. I can go to sleep and not even worry about it. And wake up with a clear conscience and be accused by the church of being some uncompassionate heretic. Yeah, I'm some hard person because I'm not staying up all night crying and slobbering over something that God's in control of, and I'm not. I'm not in control. The only one in control of this world is God. I'm not worried about some Antichrist coming, taking over the world, and doing all these bad things. Because if he can do that, then I'm worshiping the wrong one. Right? If this person they want to call a person Antichrist, it's a spirit anyway, it's not a person, is going to take over, then we're worshiping the wrong. If he's the most powerful, then he can defeat God. Right? I mean, that's what they say. I'll tell you, there's a mess out there. All I know is God is in his temple. Isn't that right? God is in his temple. Did he say it in Habakkuk? God, the Lord is in his holy temple, which we are. So guess what? I don't have to worry about it. I don't have to be concerned about what's going to happen. If I wake up in the morning or don't wake up in the morning, what is that to me? Where will I be? I'll be with him, because I'm with him whether I'm here or whether I'm there. See? Paul said it this way, I'm in a dire strait. I could go on and be with the Lord. It'd be better for me if I did, but it's better for you that I stay. And I'll say the same thing. I could go on and be with the Lord, but I'd rather stay here and help people. I really would. You think this life is fun in the world? Does anyone really say that this life in this world has been fun all the way through? Huh? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've got a lot of peaks, a lot of valleys. Yeah. See? But if we understand that, that's what it's about. It's not about having a lot of joy about doing and see what I can accomplish in this life in the natural. But if I can help one person, boy, I've done something in my life. I feel like I've accomplished something. Just one person finding out who they are. getting out of the condemnation that the world has put on them and the church system's put on them. I've done something. See? And I'd rather do that. I'd rather put up with all the hell and all the accusations that people put on me. Just let me touch somebody and bring life into them. That's all I want to do. And I'll be the happiest person you've ever seen. And I'll sit in the midst of the prison, and after they beat me, I'll still sing and I'll still worship, because I know I've accomplished something in God. And I know it wasn't me, but He gave me the honor and the privilege to do it. Any questions this morning?